And what a Devon cast we have for you, with guests aplenty this time around. Later on, we've got writer, broadcaster and political prize fighter Alastair Campbell. We've got Devon actor, singer and comedian Charlie Baker. And we've got the frontman of 90s pop sensations, the Boo Radleys. I'm Guy Henderson.
And I'm Alison Stevenson. On the way this week, Russell Brand's show in Plymouth is cancelled following serious sexual allegations, which he denies.
We join the people of Brixham as they find out more about ambitious new plans for a luxury hotel and spa beside their favourite beach. And a local fisherman tells us about his David and Goliath battle.
Plus, Plymouth celebrates its special relationship with the Navy as 150 sailors and Royal Marines take part in a ceremony and parade in the city.
This is going to be a long podcast. You might want to make yourself a cup of tea.
Devoncast.
From Radio X.
It's been a busy old week in Torbay, with council meetings every night this week. Last night's full council session didn't finish until nearly 10 p.m, and there have been some big decisions to make. The council has decided to wind up the Torbay Development Agency, the company set up to lead the bay's regeneration. Times have changed, they heard, and companies like the TDA have had their day. The council is bringing the regeneration work back in-house. Also, the council's housing company, Tor Vista Homes, is under scrutiny. The administration has decided to put it on ice for the time being while it has a close look at how it operates. A £1.5 million loan is being written off, and the company will no longer be allowed to borrow millions for its projects. One member told the council the bay didn't want to end up with the Three Rivers, referring to the housing company at Mid Devon Council, which has racked up debts of more than £20 million. But the biggest round of applause in the council chamber was for Brixham fisherman Tristan Northway, who handed in a petition signed by 763 people calling for action. Tristan described his David and Goliath battle to sell his catch on the quayside as post-pandemic law changes leave him high and dry. His little blue boat is the smallest and oldest in the Brixham fleet, and he was able to bring fresh fish to the quay as bylaws were relaxed during the COVID pandemic. But now the regulations have come back into force, and he's driving thousands of motorway miles to sell his catch instead of selling it locally. Here's Tristan.
Yeah, I've attended a full council meeting to ask them to amend the bylaws to allow me to sell fresh fish directly from the Adela.
Because you were doing this during the pandemic.
That's correct.
You started doing it during the pandemic.
Yep, yep.
But they relaxed the bylaws.
There's
then,
a couple of bylaws.
Come back in again.
Yeah,
now?
There's a couple of bylaws that they relaxed during the pandemic. And since the pandemic was... sort of relaxed itself, they reinforced the bylaws again, basically hindering my... Well, what they didn't realise is through COVID, businesses evolved, and I evolved, and I managed to make it work for what I do, but it was a very strong offering, not just for Brixham, but for the whole of Torbay. And then for them just to nigh on click their fingers and stop me doing what I was doing... not only has it affected my earning potential, but also the opportunity for people to get proper fresh fish. Landing on the market has just it's been monopolised, and small boat fishermen just don't stand a chance, really.
Is this kind of a David and Goliath thing then? Because you are, I've seen pictures of your boat, it is a very small boat.
It is the smallest in the fleet. Yeah, it's literally the smallest trawler in the fleet compared to everybody. And I might add, she's the oldest as well, being over 50-year-olds. Very pretty, but she does what I need her to do. I think I made my point. I think I stuck to what I needed to say. Hopefully, fingers crossed, I can get them amended, and maybe, you know, I'll get back to where I should be and where people want me, back on the pontoon selling the freshest fish you'll ever buy.
Devon comedian Charlie Baker is heading home in November for a gig at the Babbicombe Theatre in Torquay. He's been on a marathon tour of the country with his 24-hour Pasty People show, which will be filmed for posterity at his Torquay date. I've been chatting to Charlie, who's a mad keen Torquay United fan, about the day the Gulls manager came to a show, why the Babbicombe Theatre is such a special place, and how on earth you explain Trago Mills to the good people of Hull.
24-hour Pasty People, it's a bit like Halley's Comet. You're coming back around again.
Back around again. It was a huge success, Guy. I had a great time with it. The show's great, and people really enjoy it. And I feel like it's the most me I've ever been in anything. I'm really proud of the show. It's really exciting to try and explain. Like, I was in Hull on Saturday night, and I was trying to explain what Trago Mills is to the people of Hull.
Did they get it?
Because there's a big bit about Trago Mills in my show, and so I have to. So when I first did, I started this tour in Tynmouth, and it went really well because, you know, I'm talking to people about their bus route or whatever. But I did. Somebody did go after me. How are you going to do this in Salford or Birmingham? Or I was like, well, I don't really know, but I'll find a way. And it's actually worked better. It's actually, but because you have to explain yourself and explain what stuff is and stuff like Traeger Mills and that sort of thing. It's a show that's not about Devon, but it's like a love letter to Devon. It's like a sort of it's a show about growing up in the countryside and living in the countryside. I think how countryside people are a little bit different and in a good way, and it's a show. It's just funny. It's just fun. I never leave more than 20 seconds without a joke or a laugh. There's songs in it.
Yeah.
There's dancing in it. Very sexy dancing I do in it, Guy. I'm very sexy man all of a sudden.
I was there at Tynmouth. I was actually sat next to the Torquay United manager and his assistant.
Oh, yeah. Now, there's a bit about heights in it. There's a good fun bit about heights. It's my favourite bit of the show, the routine about heights, which is about what's the worst height. And I go on about people who are 5 foot five, 5 foot six. And I go on about people who are 6 foot two.
Yeah.
And 6 foot two guys. And then Gary and Aaron came up to me afterwards, and then Gary went, I'm 5 foot six. And Aaron went, I'm 6 foot two. See, like, we thought you were talking about us for a bit there. But yeah. Oh, that was very nice. They came actually, Gary and Aaron. That was really nice. The show's developed a little bit. I've jigged it around a little bit. But yeah, we're coming to Babbacombe, which is the big one. We're filming it in Babbacombe. They asked me if I wanted to film the show, and I said yes. Can I do it in Torquay? I thought about Boots and Laces for a bit, but I wanted to sort of pack it, be at the spiritual home of Bruce Forsyth. My nan had a guest house in Torquay. I sort of put it down to my nan getting free tickets for the Princess Theatre when we were growing up, that I became a comedian in the first place. So yeah, we're trying to sell as many tickets for the Babbacombe Theatre as we possibly can.
It's November the 10th, isn't it, Babbacombe Theatre?
November the 10th. It's a Friday. Torquay United are away the next day. They're not at home, which is a bit of a shame. They're away the next day, but I made sure it didn't clash with a Gulls match. And I'd love as many Torquay United fans, well, I'd love as many Devonshire people down there as possible. We're about half full at the moment, so it'd be nice to sell a sort of 100 or two more, just so when we film it, it doesn't look like Devon's as empty as everyone thinks it is. I'll tell you what, loads of Torquay fans have come down. It's so nice. It's so nice. Even in Hull on Saturday night, guy Steve was sat front and centre with his Torquay United promotion shirt on from the last time we won the National League South. So they really have come out. It's been absolutely lovely.
Brilliant.
And the whole show's been a lot of fun.
I'm not going to give the game away for anybody that's listening and wants to go along, but one of your catchphrases from the show has entered our family vocabulary straight away. I'm not even going to say which
Facebook,
one it is.
Facebook one.
That's the one. Yeah, that's the one.
You can say it. Get it on the marketplace, guys.
Somebody says in the household, what are we going to do with this leftover pasta? And somebody comes back in, get it on the marketplace.
Get it on the marketplace. Oh, yeah. Oh, well, listen, I try and get as many catchphrases going in my life as possible. I love a catchphrase. And the Babbacombe Theatre is so nice. But the interior is, it feels untouched since sort of 60s, 70s and just in a good way as well, in a sort of classy way. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to playing it. Apparently the Tim Vine, or the comedian, always says the stage, not the stage, there's a door from the dressing room that you open, and you're sort of off the end of the cliff. But he always goes, so if a gig goes badly, there's an easy way out.
It won't. I look forward to it, Charlie. Thank you very much for your time.
Cheers, Guy. Up the Gulls.
And now, a show by comedian Russell Brand, due to take place at the Plymouth Pavilions in aid of the city's Trevi charity, which helps women in recovery, was postponed after the star was accused of serious sexual offences, which he's denied. After extensive investigations, the Sunday Times, The Times and Channel 4 show Dispatches reported claims that Brand raped, sexually assaulted and emotionally abused women in the mid-2000s. Plymouth's Violence Against Women and Girls champion, Councillor Zoe Riley, campaigned for the show to be postponed, and later all remaining dates on the bipolarisation tour were cancelled. She speaks here to the full council.
As Violence Against Women and Girls champion for our city, and in light of news relating to Russell Bland over the weekend and the concerns that have been shared with me by residents, I would like to take this opportunity to say Plymouth City Council have made huge efforts to make our city a beacon for tackling violence against women and girls, with the Purple Flag accreditation extension, working towards a VORG charter, the strategic lead for VORG, who is working tirelessly to tackle violence against women and girls, and for Man Culture, who are having groundbreaking conversations, such as holding the very successful conference on the 6th of September with many in attendance. This is just a small amount of the work that is going on through our dedicated officers. For myself, connecting people together so that we can all have open, honest and appropriate conversations on how we not only tackle VORG, but how we understand it. Working with Councillor Sally Hayden, Youth Parliament, NSPCC, the police, Man Culture, the Fire Service, Youth Service and many more. It's really important work and I am passionate about delivering, as are all of those involved. Anyone who watched the programme at the weekend will understand the feelings it will have brought up for many of those suffering from the effects of domestic abuse and sexual violence. The fact that Friday's show has been sold under the banner of supporting women, and with the very serious nature of the allegations, I stand by my statement that it would be inappropriate for this show to go ahead, and I have asked Plymouth Pavilions to reflect on whether it should.
Brixham people have turned out in force to find out more about ambitious plans to transform their beloved Breakwater Beach. Hundreds queued across the waterfront car park for a chance to get inside the Breakwater Bistro to see the plans for themselves after owner Jack Turton unveiled a £30 million scheme for a luxury hotel on the Torbay Council-owned site. Mr Turton, who bought the lease on the popular bistro earlier this year for around £2 million, says the Blue Flag Beach and its facilities are in safe hands and the development will bring new jobs and more tourists to Brixham.
Well, the overall scheme is to put this bistro back into perpetuity, so it's going to last 100 years. At the minute, with lots of problems with it, its underground pinning is completely shot. So in the next 5 years, we're going to have to do something radical. So we decided to look at it and see what we could bring to the public realm as well as privately. We're not here to just build. We're trying to build something that suits Brixham. The Breakwater Beach will not change. The beach doesn't get touched. The only thing that we do at the minute for the beach is keep the blue flag by keeping the beach clean and tidy, making sure that there's no litter or sharp objects out there, which there is a lot of times.
Mr Turton's development company, Brixham Mortar, says the new 44-bedroom hotel would be built to 4 or 5-star standards and would have a restaurant, roof bar, gym, spa and a new beachside bistro. There would also be self-catering apartments on stilts, free changing rooms for beach users and free public toilets. But some locals are not convinced. Here's Brixham born and bred, Paul Ward.
Ridiculous, rubbish. And I saw the two men at the end of the queue and I asked them who they were and they said, we're the architects. And I said, I'm just going to say one word to you. And I said, vile.
They're saying that it will bring economic benefits, it'll bring jobs and it'll bring tourism. What do you think of that?
I don't think it's right, because there's lots of businesses along here that have got hotels and bed and breakfast that will take that away from them. It'll take the car park away. It's the only beach that has any disabled access, so it's going to take all that away. It's ridiculous. If you go and look at the plans, they've got pictures of the upon the road here, which has got the most beautiful view here, and they're saying this is the view from Berryhead Road, and it's the back of the hotel. Well, who wants to see that? There's nobody here for it. They're all against it. I can assure you of that.
And Robin Hooker, whose Save Our Beach store was gathering local opinions, said the majority of people he had spoken to were against the plans.
The majority of people are saying they don't like it. They don't like it because of the overcrowding. Mm-hmm. They don't like it that it's going to take some of our precious beach away. It's only a small beach.
Yeah.
It's almost like a family beach because it's a Brixham beach. Our holidaymakers come here and enjoy it as well. Mm-hmm. But the kids have to come down and sit on it after school. People come after work. And people fish from it, people go boating from it, and it's very small.
Do you fear that might be lost if this goes ahead?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The present plans have got to go out on stanchions into the beach. But even if he does moderate it, any single sort of square inch that's taken away from our little beach will be really important to us. It's not big. It's a sweet little beach. Everybody loves it. And I think the beach is so attractive, so useful. Summer, autumn, winter, when the storms are raging, people come down and they stand on the beach, they watch the wave go over the breakwater. It's just a little local lovely beach.
Bricks and Mortar says it will maintain the beach's coveted blue flag status and keep it accessible to all, with improved disabled access. It also intends to go on giving nearby Shoalston Pool financial help, as well as increasing the capacity of the marina car park. Planning consultant Charles Giselle explains.
We're talking about a new 44-bed hotel development on the Breakwater Beach. It will include a spa, restaurant, gym, community facilities on the ground floor, increased public toilets, which will be free to use, changing rooms for people who use the beach, particularly the wild swimmers and the divers. There'll be water sports available, and also new beach huts. So it will be larger than the development that's here. It's designed very much to reflect the character of the buildings around Brixham Harbour. It is larger, but it has been designed to be broken up into individual buildings and also to have views in between from the road at the top. It definitely helped the economy of Brixham. It would bring a considerable number of jobs, secondary spend into the community, and also the facilities. I mean, the facilities I described, they'll all be open to the public. The bistro will continue. It'll also be pitched to be used and benefited by the local community as well as visitors. The Breakwater Bistro supports Shoalston Pool. 15 pence of every coffee sold goes as a donation. I think the bistro is given them over £3,000 in the last few months, and yes, we'll continue to look to see if we can support them. Blue Flag Beach is actually maintained in part by the work that the bistro currently does to clean the area. Blue Flag will be maintained, and during construction there will be a careful management plan to make sure there is no pollution whatsoever of the sea. At this stage we just want to show people what the information is, the correct information. There's been a lot of misinformation put out in the last week or so on social media. So today's the first opportunity for everyone to see exactly what is proposed and hopefully make their own views. If they've got any feedback, we can take that on board. There'll be many public consultation events for this development, and what you see today may not be what actually gets put forward ultimately. Unfortunately, some incorrect information was put out on social media to begin with, and that has created, I think, a lot of concern. So we're just about putting the correct information out there today, letting people, from their own view, we'll take on board comments, and then we'll have a look at the design. Brixham is just marvellous. This part of Brixham is fantastic, and it's about actually looking after what makes this place special and putting something in it that's going to help the Brixham economy grow, create jobs. It's about both of those things.
Former New Labour spin doctor Alistair Campbell's been in Devon this week promoting his new book, But What Can I Do?, at the Budleigh Salterton Literary Festival. He knows Devon well, having trained on the old Mirror Group training scheme, which in its day was a leading route into the industry for journalists, and working on the Tavistock Times, which you know well, Ali.
Yes, I was at the Tavistock Times for a couple of decades, so I was there for quite a while, but never bumped into Alistair Campbell, unfortunately, but heard an awful lot of stories about him.
His name crops up every now and then.
It certainly does.
I was on the Mirror Group training scheme as well, but I was a year or maybe 2 years behind Alistair Campbell, so I saw him and I'm aware of him having been there, but I never worked with him, and he won't remember me, that's for absolutely sure.
Oh, I'm sure he would, Guy.
So Alistair Campbell has been speaking to Radio X's Josh Tate. And to set a bit of context, Josh is Britain's youngest newsreader, and he started with a reference to Josh's age when he explained his links to the county.
Well, I know Devon quite well, because when I was a bit older than you, when I was early 20s training as a journalist, I trained on the Tavistock Times. And actually coming into Budleigh Salterton today, it had that sort of feel to it. But it's nice, I like being here. I went for a swim in the sea. Couldn't really get going very well. The waves, it was pretty strong in there. But yeah, nice.
So let's start about what the Prime Minister said today about climate change. Mm-hmm. if you were still doing your communications for Labour, what would you be thinking and what would you be saying right now?
Well, I'll tell you exactly what I watched his speech and I'll tell you exactly what I tweeted. If it's the massive change that he says it is, why is he doing it as a press conference, not a statement in Parliament? And if it's such a big change, why aren't we having a general election so people can vote for it? I think the country's just sick to death of the whole thing. You know, there's such an inherent contradiction in what he's saying. We're committed to net zero. We're not watering down our commitments. Here's how I'm watering down our commitments. It's just all... And I think they're kind of making things up as they go along. And I think one of the things this government does, I think it gaslights the country the whole time. What did his thing on the lectern say, long-term decisions for a brighter future or something? They're literally making stuff up day by day. I mean, I honestly do think the country's desperately needed change and they've got to go as soon as they can.
You've claimed that democracy is broken. Why do you think that?
No, I don't think democracy is broken. I think democracy is under real threat. Look, democracy is broken in some parts of the world. You look at what's happened with Putin in Russia, you look at China, you look at India, you look at what was happening in Brazil until quite recently. And I just think there's a lot of the same things that led to those changes are happening in our country as well. So we've just got to be very wary. You can argue that the fact that eventually the Conservatives got rid of Johnson, the fact that they got rid of Truss quite quickly, you could argue that's the system sort of working. But the country has not had a say in that. And I think that democracy is under real pressure because the people that we've put in power in recent years have been stressing the institutions to breaking point. Don't underestimate how much damage is done to our politics by having somebody as Prime Minister for a few years, Johnson. I mean, anybody who's known him for longer than 3 minutes knows he's a liar. Anybody who's known him for longer than 10 minutes knows that you can't trust the guy as far as you can throw him. And we've put him in there. And he's done fundamental damage to our institutions, which I don't think Sunak is really doing enough to repair.
What do you think should happen over the next 6 to 12 months?
Well, I mean, the country's drifting. There's no real leadership. There's got to be change. There's got to be an election. There's got to be... You know, they don't have to have it. Sunak's democratically entitled to stay there. But what is he for? What is this government for? And I just think with the scale of challenges that we face, the scale of the number of things that just frankly don't work in this country, I actually sent home a message today saying, don't quite believe it, but I got in on time today. Both the trains I got were on time. And that's like a sort of bit of a shock. You know, the trains worked. But, you know, even going down to swim in the sea today and all people say, oh, you've got to watch out for the sewage. And I'm thinking, you know, you come to a beautiful place on the seaside and you've really got to worry about whether there's going to be sort of brown stuff floating alongside you as you swim. It's just, you know, and they've allowed this to happen. I do think, you know, Sunak obviously gets a lot of the flak now because he's the Prime Minister, but a lot of these problems go back to Cameron and Osborne and austerity. A lot of the problems go back to Brexit and a lot of the problems go back to Johnson.
So talking about elections, in Exeter we had May elections for councillors and only 36% of the population went to vote. So that's 2 in 3 adults didn't vote. Yeah. What would you recommend or encourage people to do to vote?
Well, as it happens, this is a minority view. I am actually in favour of compulsory voting for all local and national elections. But short of that, what has to happen is that it's the challenge to politicians to rebuild that link so that people feel they not only that they can have a say, but they must have a say. And, you know, the book that I'm talking about tonight is essentially about that. It's about how do you get involved? How do you get engaged? Trying to make people understand they do have agency. I think what's happened is that people have just sort of given up hoping that they can make change through their own political activism and let alone through voting. And I think it's tragic that when you meet young people in particular, young women in particular, who say, oh, there's no point voting, they're all the same, nothing ever changes. It's just nonsense. They're not all the same, and things are changing fast. And the question is, do you want to be part of that change, have a say in that change, or just sort of walk on by?
So Labour will change the voting age to 16 if they win the next general election. What do you think about that?
I'm totally in favour of it. Totally in favour of it. And one of the best things about the Scottish referendum was the fact that 16 and 17-year-olds had a say, and it changed the nature of the debate. And even though a lot of them voted in a way that I wouldn't necessarily wanted them to vote, I just think it just made the debate healthier. And I'm even thinking we should bring it lower, but match it to political education in schools. We are one of the most ill-informed countries on the planet. You go to France and Germany, people really have an understanding of how their politics works. A lot of people in Britain, partly it's because of the way the media covers politics, but it's also the fact that we don't have proper political education in this country.
So when you were in power for over a decade, why did lowering the age of voting not come to your mind, or did it come to mind?
We talked about it, and I guess, you know, the difference between sitting here and saying what I think about an issue and people actually being in government having to address different priorities. I guess we didn't think at the time that it was a big enough priority. But I think that our politics, you know, I don't think our democracy is broken. I think the democratic institutions can be made stronger. But our politics feels like it's breaking. And I think we need real radical political change. And one of those changes, I think, should be to lower the voting age.
Thank you. Is there anything you'd like to say about your book quickly?
Buy it. No, you can say it. Listen, that's like saying, you know, there it is, it's called But What Can I Do? Why Politics Has Gone So Wrong and What You Can All Do to Fix It. The main thing to do to fix it is to take an interest, get engaged, get involved, and not think that you can't make that difference, because you can.
Alistair Campbell, speaking with Radio X's Josh Tait at the Budleigh Salterton Literary Festival. Depending what time you're listening to this podcast, you still may be able to get to some events. It finishes on Sunday. There's a shorter spring festival too, and Radio X is media sponsor.
And last but not least, the Boo Radleys had one big hit in the 90s, and while the band has new music, two new albums recently, individually they've also had other interesting lines of work. Simon Rowbottom, also known as Dr. Sice, was lead singer and guitarist. He's also a psychologist, and he's in Devon next week at the Phoenix in Exeter with a solo show, The Secret of Happiness, which combines music and psychology.
I'm Simon Rowbottom. I'm also known as Dr. Sice. I'm the lead singer and guitarist of the Boo Radleys. We were around and successful in the 1990s, and we're also recently released a couple of albums and we're out on tour. But what I'm currently doing at the moment is I'm trying to bring together my kind of two careers, because I also retrained as being a psychologist. So I'm currently I'll be out doing my one-man show, which is called The Secret of Happiness. And that'll be out end of September. I'll be visiting Padstow and Exeter. And the show is an attempt to bring together music and psychology, but with an emphasis on mental health. And what I kind of want to do is to make mental health more understandable. So Exeter is Wednesday, the 27th of September. It's at the Exeter Phoenix Workshop. So I'll be there on the 27th. And it's a kind of theatre show, but it also has music, and it's also hopefully really good fun as well, because it's kind of about not taking it too seriously as well. It's not just a kind of lecture. Some of it's from my own personal experience. So I'll be kind of talking about, you know, my time as a musician, kind of doing Glastonbury Festival, doing Top of the Pops, a lot of these kind of famous things that I went through, but also playing music and talking about psychology and kind of integrating mental health into that. I'll kind of do a couple of Boo Radley songs, and I'll do some kind of covers that I think have a kind of connection to mental health and sometimes are kind of threaded through with the narrative of the show. It is lighthearted, it's not taking things too seriously, so you're actually after a good night out. It fits the bill.
Simon Rowbottom, Dr. Sice, that piece produced by Alfie Richardson. That's it for this episode. Thanks as always for listening. Devoncast will return very soon with more of the stories behind the county's news headlines. Bye for now, but before we go, from the Boo Radleys, this is Seeker.
podcast from Radio X.